I know this will work itself out over time, but I have to learn how to sit with it. That was kind of the struggle on like a nervous system level, where I was just like, okay, I just have to let go of this for a little bit and just kind of be okay with things not being fixed tomorrow. It's like, you didn't get into this in a day, it's not going to come out in a day. This is going to be something that's going to take months, 6 months, you know. Look at it at, you know, are you getting better every month, not every day?
Welcome back to the Your Great Podcast. Today's conversation is a special one. It's kind of a reunion. I'm sitting down with Hunter, a client I first spoke with back in July of 2024. At the time, Hunter was in a place many might recognize, actually. He was hitting a metabolic breaking point. Despite being an athlete and a trainer, he was dealing with debilitating OCD, insomnia, and chronic fatigue. In this episode, we catch up on his transformation over the last year. We talk about the humbling power of nature, why luxury boredom is a nutrient for the nervous system, and how Hunter moved from a state of hypervigilance and starvation into a life of food freedom and mental clarity. Whether you're struggling with anxiety or just feel like your system is running on empty, Hunter's story is a beautiful reminder that healing isn't a day-to-day race, it's a month-to-month evolution. Let's dive in. Hey, Hunter.
Hey, Unique, how are you?
I'm great. Where are you located?
I'm in White Bear Lake, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, so this is my, I don't know if you can see through the window or not, but...
Brr.
It's cold. This weekend.
Are you born and raised? Yes. Is this hometown?
This is hometown.
Nice.
Yep. So I've got three older brothers and everybody's been here for 30. My parents have lived in the same place for like 40 something years now.
Did you ever think to leave, or did you go to school locally, or have you always been?
I did a little bit. My brother lived out in Colorado for like 5 years. But it was pretty hard to move away from everybody. Like once it was like in your 20s, like, yeah, it'd be great. And then after that, it's like, oh, now you got roots and then business.
It's hard. I mean, especially if you're close with family.
Yes, we're all super close. We're all into fishing and hunting and all that stuff. So we're all very close.
Did you read the book, The Comfort Crisis?
No.
Oh, really? Because you said hunting, and this journalist writes about his kind of evolution, moving away from drinking alcohol and kind of, you know, just really changing his life. Part of the things that really made him appreciate his life was going hunting. And he went on a month long trip in Alaska hunting and had to clean and carry a moose and all of these things, burning like 3,000 calories a day and living in a tent and eating kind of like mush and all of this stuff just to kind of hunt this. Was it a moose or something? It was
probably an elk.
Some rather large animal.
Probably a moose. If it's Alaska, it's probably a moose.
So, and he just talked about how being out there with you're wearing the same clothes, you're hunting a big animal, and everything is in respect of like the animal, and you're looking for the oldest one who wouldn't have a long life, and all of these things that I would never think about with a hunter. But he gets back and he said, what's amazing about getting back after this trip to Alaska of like hunting, and he wasn't a hunter previously, was how much he appreciates everything he has, like at a level that he can't even describe. He's like, oh, warm water.
Seriously. Are you familiar with like the Boundary Waters canoe area up in Minnesota? So it's like a preserved area, and like basically it goes from like northeast Minnesota all the way up into like Canada. And it's been this way for, I don't know when they started the BWCA, but it's paddle only in a lot of areas. So you can only canoe. You can't fly over. There's no planes that can fly over. And we'll go in for 4 days or something, and you're just camping out, and like we'll bring food with us, and then we'll catch a lot of fish. It just gives you that subtle reminder, like, wow, like We have it so easy. Like, there's no showers. It can be cold. We've gone up there where it's like 35 to 38 degrees at night, and you wake up and you're just like frigid cold. And then you gotta boil water and you gotta do this. And it's still easy because you're just boiling MREs. But then you get back and you're like, oh my gosh, you get a nice hot shower and you're like, wow, I've taken so much for granted. And so when
Yeah.
you do like a trip like that, that humbles you quick.
And just he, what he was highlighting, and it's a great book if you decide to dig into it, Michael Easter. But what he was highlighting was we get so comfortable, and then it's easy to get depressed and all of these things because we're so disconnected from life without all the bells and whistles. Even people who don't think they have bells and whistles go hunting for a week.
Have so much of an appreciation for where your food comes from and the ease. It's so easy for us to get wrapped up into society of like, oh, I got to do more and I got to hurry up. And I tell all my clients, slow down, turn the TV off, go for a walk, read a book, and learn how to disconnect from your phone. We're just so minute to minute social media, and it's heartbreaking where people forget the importance of allowing your body, brain to be bored.
Oh, well, yeah, that's something else he highlights, by the way. So it's interesting that you talk about it, is like the luxury of boredom, of just sitting there for hours staring at an anthill, w waiting for the herd to come, just like all of these things he talks about where you're just like,
And it's something like so amazing for your nervous system. Like, we take that for granted. I wore a Whoop for a really long time, and just like looking at like the nervous system, like you're like it, and Whoop has like that real-time stress monitor. And if I would watch TV after work or whatever, and I had the TV on for 2 hours, I'm like, oh, I'm enjoying my time. And I would look at my stress monitor, and it's like a 1.2 to 1.5, which is mid-grade stress. And then if I sit down and read a fiction book that like really encapsulates my imagination and like I get lost in the book, I'll look at my stress monitor and it's like meditating. It's as low as it can go. And I'm like, got it. So TV and cell phones are just slowly killing us.
yeah, keeping us high stress when we think we're winding down. It's such a good point that you bring. And I'm an easily stressed person. So tracking with a Whoop was humbling for me because I thought, oh, I'm chilling. No, yeah, no. Like my nervous system, it's when I watch TV, I have like a boundary. I don't watch things that scare the shit out of me. I watch comedies, I watch cooking shows, I watch things that I'm like, oh, this is like a hug,
Yes, exactly.
or I'd rather
Even
read a
like
book.
nature shows, like stuff that has like really beautiful like landscape and like really cool colors. I mean, think about like being on edge watching a horror movie. Is that really good for you?
No, why do
No.
people want to be scared shitless? I'm scared shitless all the time. I don't need to be
Like,
scared.
I want to get away from that as much as possible. I don't need this in my life. It's too much as it is. I have enough childhood trauma from horror movies to like terrify me. So I'm good. I'm good.
Why am I going to pay to go to the movies to have the shit scared out of me?
Until you're living in like a really high stressful situation, I don't think you realize just how sensitive your system is. And so you become like, once you go through something like a health crisis or what have you, you realize just like, oh, it can be like hair trigger sometimes.
Yeah.
So movies like, nope, get out in nature, go for a walk, read a book, do some breath work or prayer or what have you, and like learn how to just be present and still. And you're like, if you build that habit, man, it's like your mental clarity, your energy level, like your appreciation just goes up so much. Quality
Yeah.
of
Yeah. I mean, I've never been a person to have like a TV in the bedroom. I remember going, my daughter's going to friend's house and be like, Mom, they have a TV in their room. And I was like, ew, no, like
seriously.
no TV in the room. No,
No. And
it's
it's
like,
like not even a TV, it's like TV on steroids.
yeah, it's a TV that like you can do anything at any hour. It's not like when I was a kid, if you got up in the middle of the night and you couldn't sleep, you turned on the TV and it was fuzz.
I
There's
feel
no
like that's
fuzz.
because it had just enough technology to kind of make your life a little bit simpler and a little bit more exciting without being like, this is all I do. My brothers and I, so we're all within like 5 years of each other. And we're all super close. And like we had, the Nintendo 64 in the 90s, but like we would be outside like this weather. We just got a bunch of snow and we were texting last week. We're like, man, you guys remember we used to sled at this hill called Candyland? And we're like, you guys want to meet up in 20 minutes at Candyland? I just feel so heartbroken for these kids. I mean, just general society where it's just like, they don't know how to disconnect. I tell it to all my clients. I'm like, you gotta be really aware of, like, hyper vigilant of like how much time you're spending on your cell phones, because it's killing our mental health
Yeah.
and it's
Yeah,
heartbreak.
numbing us out and disconnecting us from our bodies. I think that's a big one with nutrition and how we nourish ourselves. And I would imagine you see firsthand the fact that people can't out-train poor eating habits. You
Not at
can't. You
all.
can't get the results they actually want until they stop numbing out with food.
Yep. And it's hard because it's almost a full-time job, especially when we're working, you know. And most people don't know what, you know, it's just like, oh, I ate this really healthy thing. I'm like, what was that? And they're like, oh, it's a whole grain, you know, Quaker Oats nutrition bar or whatever. I'm like, okay, that's great. I'm glad that you're making conscientious decisions, but let's try to get something a little bit more.
Yeah, what you're touching on is complicated, right? It's like
Yes.
pe what people think is healthy, what they don't understand is thermodynamics of energy expenditure and energy balance, especially if you're trying to lose weight or gain muscle or get more defined body where you can see more muscle. Let's just say you want to shed that layer of fat, you're cutting, whatever it is. Like pe most people don't understand the role of diet and all of that.
It's so complex. It's so complicated. And it's hard. Just eating enough food, like of the right, because when you switch, like get people to start eating real whole food, it's like you have to eat a lot. Like it's not just like, oh yeah, like I had this and this. I'm like, they're like, oh, I had, you know, I'm like, I try to tell clients, I'm like, just as a bare minimum, like 30 grams of protein per meal, like minimum. Like start with breakfast. That's like your one meal to like nail. If you can do that, let's hit that for a week and then let's, you know, add something. I'm like, what'd you do? They're like, oh, I had a high protein meal. I'm like, what was it? They're like, I had two eggs. I'm like, that's really good. That's only 12 grams of protein. And it's just like, so, but you
And
know.
they're expensive. To try to get 30 grams of protein with eggs is a very expensive meal, you know, if you're thinking about your overall calorie intake.
Seriously. Yes. Exactly.
I think that's probably just like, I guess it'd be 5 or 6, but yeah, it is. It's expensive. That's the other funny thing is people think they are doing a good job guessing how much they're eating, tracking and taking the guess out of how much you're actually eating and understanding your energy balance needs, or you're just guessing all the time. And half of the things that we think are healthy, like this Quaker bar that you're talking about, have a lot of sugar and have all of these other components. And it's actually a really expensive thing to eat. And it's not hitting essential nutrients. You're losing out on essential things that your body needs you to eat every day, and you're replacing it with this expensive, high calorie thing that isn't actually giving you what your body essentially needs. The term overfed and malnourished comes to mind.
It's really enlightening. I'll just have people track, like I'll use a FitnessPal or chronometer and just track it. And they're like, oh my gosh, I'm only eating 12 or 1300 calories. I'm like, now we can up it. And then you can start to ballpark it after a little bit more time. And, you know, you can use your hands as your measurement, like one palm size, you know, thing of lean protein and this and that. But once they get, like, I had one client, she was just like terrified of eating. Like, she just didn't know what to do. It's like, you know, she did, I said Beachbody or something like that. I said
Yeah.
something along those lines. And she's like, she was just so burnt out. And she's just, I don't know what to do anymore. And I don't know how much to work out. I'm like, one, you're overworking. You're working out way too much. You're eating way too little. So now you're just running on stress and can't sleep. I'm like, let's just dial it back, work out once, maybe twice a week for 15 to 30 minutes. You know, focus on this, some strength building. And then let's eat more food. Like, just focus on real whole food and eat until you're satisfied, like almost to the point where you're full and like up it. And she's like, I'm eating way more food than I've ever eaten, and I've lost like 10 pounds.
Because people kind of put their body in a weird stressed state when they live on too few calories all the time, you know?
Have you ever looked at the Minnesota Starvation Study?
I think so. Recall something out of that. Refresh my memory.
So it was done in the 1940s at the U of M, and they took 36 conscientious objectors that didn't want to go to war. Like, well, you can still serve your country. And so what they did is they basically said, okay, this is all you're going to do. And the average 155-pound male in the 1940s would eat 3,500 calories a day. Over the course of 6 months, they basically reduced their caloric intake by half down to like 1,700. like, yeah, they were at like 1700 calories or so. And they started going crazy. Like, they had all these psychological issues. They couldn't sleep. They started getting like anxiety and depression and insomnia. And their bodies just like started to adapt to it. And that's what's wild is like, I think so many people are living in that high stress state where it's just their new normal. Doing
Yeah,
it for
because you're undernourished, your body, brain, everything isn't getting what it needs.
was hyperactive. And then they basically like, they're like, how long does it take for these individuals to kind of correct their metabolic rate? Because your body will adapt to that over time. And so they were like, okay, refeed. And it took, they're only in that chronic state of stress for a few months, but it still took time for them to come back to like a healthy state.
But that's to intentionally put them in a starvation space to see what the psychological outcomes would be. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And it's just, and they didn't do anything like they weren't allowed to work out. They could only walk like 15 miles a week, which isn't that much, like still, a decent amount of low aerobic exercise. But, now we have people doing that and then they're working out fasted in the morning or whatever. And then they're like, I got to work out more and I got to do that. And it's like, no wonder hormones just get so jacked up.
Well, I think people are taking a bit of information from a lot of different places and trying to apply it to them when it may not be appropriate at all. It also
Yes.
makes me wonder if people in cold climates need more calories too, by the way. Like, I do wonder about that.
I mean, if you just look at the metabolic expenditure of just being like, if you're cold, your body's like, okay, let's upregulate thermogenesis so that we can keep you in a state of homeostasis that requires calories. In the wintertime, like if I'm trying to drop body fat, I'm like, instead of like, I'm gonna sit at home and sit under a blanket and make it so my body doesn't have to work more.
Well, all of this to bring it to how you discovered me and your journey. Like, why don't you just talk a little bit about your health journey and how you landed working with me?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got into working out in my teen years. It was always kind of a passion thing for me. In nutrition, I had a pretty terrible relationship with food from when I was growing up, the youngest of four boys, and just had my own body image issues, which is very under talked about with males. And when you're teenagers in your early 20s, you could just kind of get away with pushing the needle as much as you want. You can undereat just because you're like running on so much hormones and testosterone or whatever. I feel really good. I'm good. I worked out just like an animal. I would work out 5, 6 days a week for an hour, hour and a half, whether it's like strength training or plyometrics or what have you. And then I think like my early 20s, it just finally caught back up. It was just kind of like, okay, we're gonna kind of shut things down. And I kind of hit that metabolic breaking point somewhere mid-20s.
Were you undernourished and overworking out? Kind of like they talk about it being reds for athletes, but I think it can apply to anybody where you're just literally depleted.
And I hit that point, and I've always been kind of like a higher energy, upbeat, fun guy. And it got to a point where I was just like, it felt like I just had a weighted vest all day where I was just so beat down, where it was just like, I want to work out again. It was so much work just to get to the gym. And then I'd get there and I'd be like, I don't want to be here anymore. And like,
Was it
that was
mental and physical or mental or physical?
both.
Oh, interesting. So it was like chronic fatigue.
Yeah. Pretty much chronic fatigue. And so I kind of went down this rabbit hole. I went into the paleo sphere because that made sense. We used to eat like this. So I would just eat sweet potatoes or potatoes in a higher fat diet. And I kept protein moderate. I got into intermittent fasting. And then it was just like once you go down that rabbit hole of paleo sphere and social media, where it's just like, oh, you should try this next. Maybe, oh, this solved my problems and this solved this. And then I went to the carnivore diet and it was just like, and then I felt just like awful. Like, but you're like, people are like, oh, just keep pushing, just keep doing it. You're going to get better. You need to increase your fat intake. Okay, I'll increase my fat intake. And, I just had terrible like digestion issues. Like, I never had like any like stomach pain or anything along those lines, but like clearly like something was wrong. And I don't even know how I found to be somewhere. I don't know if it was like Instagram or something. I just all of a sudden I was like, what the heck is the Bean Protocol? What is this? Who is Unique Hammond? And I think I listened to one of your podcasts and I'm like, no, fiber, like everybody says fiber, like, that's bad. And I'm like, well, I guess the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And so I was just kind of had that like reality ego check where it's like, all right, maybe this works for that person, but it's clearly not working for me. I need to switch
Yeah.
something up. But I think I reached out to you like, was it last?
Yeah, it was July of 2024, and you were still kind of like pulling yourself out of like the goal with working together was more energy. The desire to work out and engage with life and friends, better digestion and skin were kind of like the top goals you were working with.
And so, I'm kind of one of those like all in guys. I was dealing with like a lot of OCD at the time, and that's like a whole another discussion that I didn't even know.
How did it show up in your life?
It was a really dark, probably year and a half, and I didn't even know. I thought I knew what anxiety was prior to OCD, and I just got super obsessed with food, and then I had all these crazy intrusive thoughts, and anxiety was 10 out of 10 on a daily basis. And then I had insomnia really terrible for probably like a week or two. I was getting like 5, maybe 10 minutes of sleep a night, which then feeds back onto the anxiety. And so it's just like my system was just so pent up for so long. And so I just had to take a step back, whereas, like, yes, I understand metabolically, gut wise. Everything is kind of coming from the gut and it can help heal the brain, but the brain can also help heal the body too. And so it's just like, I know this will work itself out over time, but I have to learn how to sit with it. And so that was kind of the struggle on like a nervous system level where I was just like, okay, I just have to let go of this for a little bit and just kind of be okay with things not being fixed tomorrow. It's like, you didn't get into this in a day, it's not going to come out in a day. This is going to be something that's going to take months, 6 months. Look at it at, are you getting better every month, not every day?
That's a powerful reminder, that you had to remind yourself daily that this is going to take time. And no matter how uncomfortable I am, I just have to keep showing up. I know for me with chronic illness, I just had to keep going breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, snack, snack. Like I just had to keep feeding my body, keep getting out in the sunlight, keeping stress as low as I could within reality, right? I had kids and a full-time job. So I think the hardest thing to understand about chronically feeling unwell mentally, physically, is that reminder of like one day at a time.
Yeah, one day at a time and control what you can control.
Yeah.
That's the
Which
biggest.
is how you nourish, getting sleep,
Yep.
right?
Am I getting enough water? Am I getting enough food in? Am I de-stressing? Am I, going for a walk when I can go for a walk, get out in sunlight, not watching TV, read a book rather than watch TV or what have you? And just like slowly over time, there's a one guy that I followed on YouTube. I think that's what's really hard too with like the OCD anxiety stuff is that there's so little psychoeducation when it comes to understanding how the brain works. And that was my big thing. So I followed this guy on YouTube and it was like, I think it was called like Bye Bye Panic. And he was in this like OCD and anxiety cycle for like 5 years. And with OCD, it's like you become so obsessed mentally with like fixing the problem. And you're like really interested at like what is going on with my system? How can I solve this problem? And it's not like a, oh, I'm just going to think about it. It's like all you can think about.
Oh, it's also hypervigilance. The word hypervigilance is such an important one because I think we think we're being responsive when we're being reactive. And
Exactly.
instead of going, oh, I'm locking into something that makes sense, feels good, I can feel the difference, I'm going to lock into this and keep going. It's like you almost like keep spinning out and trying new things all the time because you think that's going to be the thing. Yeah.
And so, like, anytime one of these symptoms would come up, whether it was like insomnia or intrusive thoughts or depersonalization, derealization, which is like you literally feel like you're losing your mind.
And you're,
And
well, you feel like you're not in reality. You're in a different, you're not, you're in a, you're, it's almost like you're watching your life through a TV.
it's like a terrifying feeling. It's like you get unplugged from the matrix almost, and it's like you lose your breath and you don't know when it's going to happen. And this guy, Sean, he talked about this woman, Dr. Claire Weeks, who wrote this book, Hope and Help for Your Nerves, like Ending Anxiety Now. And it's like, learn how to desensitize your system. Instead of reacting, can you just float? Can you just let it go? And he mentioned something where it's like, this is not a day-to-day thing. This is a month-to-month. Like, is this symptom getting a little bit better every single month? Okay, yes, it is. And then you start to get those little wins and you're like, all right, I'm on the right track. And so that was just like the biggest learning lesson. Like, I'm really, I would never wish that level of OCD on anybody, because you really do feel like you've lost all sense of reality and like kind of your agency. But it gave me a lot of insight into, one, how the body works, but also just like the level of suffering that some people are living through. 100%.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I never thought, like, I'm like, oh, you're just born with that. Like, that's just who you are. And it's like, that can happen to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, look at, so also what I think I'm hearing, and you can tell me where I'm wrong, is that undernourishing yourself and working out put your body in a state where mentally you had a break.
100%. Yeah. Like your amygdala, the part of your brain is like on that hypervigilance response where it's just like, holy smokes, like you're in this state of hypersensitivity and your brain and nervous system is just like, well, there's a lion constantly chasing us. And that lion is just, you're not eating enough food. You're not nourishing your body. You're not getting enough rest and recovery. Okay, well, we're just going to, until that lion is no longer chasing us, we're just going to keep.
And even after the lion isn't chasing you and you're nourishing and you're resting and you're prioritizing like nervous system work, it takes time for it to go, are you sure it's not chasing us? Are you sure? Are you sure? And it's like, yeah, it's not. I'm taking care of business. I'm taking care of my body. Are you getting vegetables 3 times a day? Are you prioritizing sleep? No. Okay, well, that's a good place to start. Just like add vegetables to every meal. Make sure you're getting enough protein. You know, your immune system lives in your gut. So if you're drinking alcohol and you're eating sugar and you're not sleeping well, you can see how these three guys are just taking you down.
Yeah. And it's so funny too. Like, I envy sometimes of like, you know, when you're in your 20s, you can get away with it. And it comes up as like, oh, I'm just run down. I'm a little fatigued. I'm a little sick. And then it gets to a point, like, I think there's like a switch. Like, once you hit your 30s, your brain, your body's just like, we can't do this anymore.
Just the worst. Like, being a respectful parent is the hardest thing in the world, because you're like, well, do you want me to answer this? Is like, yeah, mom. And just give me a couple of things I can do. Okay, cool. I can do that. But it's so hard for me, because all I want to do is like,
do your shit, please. Yeah. You're like,
fucking wake up.
Yep. You're like, oh no, it's hard. It's really hard. I was talking to a friend about this, who's a therapist, and I deal with people that are in chronic pain, like back pain and neck pain, and help, because I've had a few knee surgeries, and that's like how I got into corrective exercise, functional movement, and helping people get out of pain. And my mom was like, oh, you know, my back, this and that. And I'm like, oh, I can help with that. It's so hard with family, because they just, sometimes it's like, they're not really looking for advice. And I'm like, I can fix this or fix that. And I was like, my friend who's a therapist, and he's just like, yeah, my mom just won't listen to me. And he just looks at me. He's like, well, no shit, dude. She breastfed you.
And I'm, what are you going to do? Well, that's also where the beginner mindset comes from, is like, we learn from everybody. We learn from everything. Like, me telling my daughter what to do, she's like, well, yeah, but you're my mom. Like, you don't count. And it's like, seriously? So, yeah.
There's just that, you know, inability to just be like, yeah, she knows what she's talking about. And I don't know what, you know, it's funny, because she could ask for advice from you and like not take it to heart. And then one other person would be say the exact same thing. And she's like, mom, did you know? And it's like, yeah, I do. I said the, yes. Yeah. I just said that, but yeah.
You're like, were you listening to me at all?
it's weird. And I have that happen with a lot of my clients too. Like, hey, my spouse said this and that, like, or I'll train the husband and I'll train the wife. And then the wife is trying to tell her husband, da da da, and then all of a sudden I'll tell the husband, thank you so much for saying that to my husband. I've been telling him for years to do X, Y, and Z, and you just said to do it. Now he's like, hey, sweetie, did you know that like if you eat breakfast within 45 minutes of waking up, it blunts your cortisol level and this and that? And she's like, yeah, interesting.
She's like, whoa. I love it. That's so cool. I'm gonna try that.
And it's just, it's so bad. Like the human behavior aspect is just so interesting when it comes to, bettering ourselves or listening to advice from one person or the other.
Gut health, you had gut issues going on, and you had eczema, fatigue, hypothyroid, anxiety, OCD. As we're getting deeper into it, you were avoiding a lot of things when we started working together, and you had started adding in some black beans into your diet. And this is like when we first spoke in July of 2024. Because of the gut issues, I kind of suggested, and also just kind of the sensitivities from being on all of these kind of extreme diets, and also the knee surgeries in 2009. And, there was a lot going on in your life as part of all of this, the matrix of unwellness, let's just say. So I gave you kind of a gut reset. And I then remember doing a follow-up call with you a month later, and you were 4 weeks without coffee.
That was a tough one for me to remove coffee. And it's really interesting with coffee because I was so, it's interesting with that pendulum too. Like when you're really pent up on OCD anxiety, it's like that pendulum swings one way and you're vibrating at such a high level where then it finally starts to come down. And then it's like, oh, we're gonna go way over this way. And then you're just like massively depressed. You have no energy. You just kind of wake up and you're like, oh my God, what's the point of any of this? So I went off of caffeine and everything for a while. I'll be honest, I am back on coffee, but it's so regulated and it's interesting because I did have that gene testing for caffeine. I can just metabolize caffeine stupidly easy. And I tell people some things work for some and some don't work for others.
Yeah, I mean, I think in your case, working with the anxiety and also the kind of the gut issues, pulling it out was definitely part of your treatment plan. Like, so how long, like, what was after we spoke, what was the journey after that for you with the protocol and everything?
So I kind of took a step back. I was like, all right, this is just kind of tweaking my OCD because it was just like, I'm trying to control this, I'm trying to fix this. And it was just kind of one of those things, like a long process of like, okay, I'm going to eat what makes me feel really safe and comfortable. And so I stuck with very basic food for a long time, which was just like rice and chicken. I do really well with like blueberries. That was the core meal plan for a while and just water. And then slowly over time, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to add this in. I'm going to add these beans back in. I would do really well with black beans, like we talked about, and putting it in an Instant Pot, making sure they're well cooked. And so then I just slowly over time started incorporating more and more. And it was kind of checking those boxes off. Am I getting enough, not just micronutrients, but macronutrients? When your body is kind of like back to that Minnesota starvation study, it's like my body's been depleted for an insanely long time. So for it to feel safe again and get the macronutrients in, I was eating like 4,200 calories a day, not gaining any weight.
You're a tall guy in the first place. What are you, 6 foot?
6'3".
So you eating, I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, right. But it was a mind trip because my relationship with food was like, oh, I can't have this much of this and that and the other. And so I just, over time, it was like, okay, I'm just going to eat what makes me feel safe. And I just kept eating more and more food. And my brain and body was just like, oh, we're finally getting enough nutrients.
Nutrients. Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now we can focus on this. And then, like, over time, kind of back to that thing where it was just like looking at it month, like, I had really bad, like, eczema on my hand, but I had really bad angular colitis. So my lips would literally like dry. They were like dry. The skin would like peel and then the lips would crack. So like I would go to eat a piece of food and the corners of my lips would just crack and start to bleed like crazy. So super uncomfortable. And then not to mention just like on a level, like it's just like, oh, now I have, what's going on with my skin and people can see it. And so I was like, okay, this is not going to resolve itself. And it was just like, what can I do to kind of mitigate the pain and just sit with it and be like, okay, my nervous system is just still tweaked out. My body's still undernourished. Just give it time, sit with it, add more food, breakfast, lunch, dinner, making sure I'm getting enough food in, getting enough sleep. And over time, those issues just started to resolve.
And I want to point out that you weren't eating crap food. You were eating nutrient dense food. You were
Yes.
eating, you were getting your protein, you were getting carbohydrates. You started to add in more fiber so you could feed the gut microbiome, which plays a big role in mental health, along with the amino acids that you were providing your body, because amino acids are really key players for mental health as well. Like you were starting to hit some of these pleasure points for the body's wellness.
Yep. And that's when I really noticed like a big jump was like anytime I would have a fatty cut of red meat, like a ribeye, it was like skin would go crap. I'd have to like run to the bathroom or what have you. And like I was just like, nope. So I stuck away from red meat for a long time because it was just like if I did red meat, it was like a top sirloin. It's very, very lean. And so like once I really upped my protein too. Like if I have breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I'll have an 8 ounce thing of chicken breast at each meal, which I don't know. I think that comes out to like 200-ish, right around 190-ish grams of protein, give or take.
So I probably get 35 grams. I probably get about 130 to 140 in a day total
Yep.
grams. And I'm 5'7" and I'm 125 pounds.
So right now if I look at my macronutrient breakdown, I get like 250 grams of protein a day, but that's not all from like lean sort like the I don't know the MyFitnessPal will track like you're getting protein from your black beans and your sourdough bread and rice and what have you. But I would just make sure like once I really started ticking those boxes of like getting a large source of protein at each meal. That's when things really started to kind of tip the scale.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It really is. Like how many things are avoidable with proper nutrition and just not, running your body ragged,
Yes.
right? Like finding that balance, the things that's so hard for humans, balance.
Yeah, and then we start to kind of like look at going through the OCD cycle in Claire Weeks' book, she talked about that when you're so far gone from reality, you look at other people and it's like they're eating like this and they're eating that. I just want to be me again. You get to the point where you're just so desperate and you're like, I'll do whatever it takes. And you just, yeah, you get so out of whack where it just takes time. And it's
Yeah.
like, and it's just.
Patience.
Patience is huge. And that's hard when you're in that state of suffering mentally. You're like, I will do. And so, a big thing to get out of it was like kind of what we were talking about earlier, how you have the bottom up and the top down approach where you can increase, you can get out of that state of stress. Dr. Scott Sher talks a lot. He talks about how everyone talks about like serotonin and dopamine as like the most prevalent neurotransmitter, but he's like, actually, the body is run off of GABA. Like, eight and like 80% of the neurotransmitter that our body produces is GABA, which is like your calming neurotransmitter, which calms the body down. It gets us into that state of relaxation. And so you can use little tools like meditation to produce GABA. And so like when I was in that really high state of stress where my body was just like so undernourished, like I would use meditation kind of as like a supplement. So that
Smart.
Was like a really good way. And like, I would get to the point where I would do a minimum of like 20 minutes a day, but sometimes I would do like an hour a day of meditation just because I was like, this is the only thing that makes me feel normal-ish until we get on the other side of this, hypervigilance. Let's use this as a supplement. And it was life-saving. It was one of those things where it brought me back to reality a little bit more, and I could be like, okay, I can calm down and I can just ease back into this nutrition protocol of like, all right, control this, control that.
Yeah, and it like I see it better than a supplement because it's, something you can do anytime, anywhere, anyhow.
Yeah, it's
I was
free.
actually, as you were saying that, I was visualizing if people played a game of every time you want to pick up your phone and scroll, you meditated instead, like what the outcome of that would be after a year.
And that's what's crazy is like to the phone, like we are like that, that is creating constant stress,
Constant anxiety.
constant, nonstop. That is
Nonstop.
like,
Compare without even knowing it, the brain is constantly comparing. The brain is constantly tracking, you know, it's like I said, it comes back to levels of consciousness. It's a profound, we're in a profound era of human life right now.
It's terrifying.
I think there's always going to be the negative to progression of human life. There's no stopping the progress that we're in the world of AI. And how I feel about it is it just makes me ground more into self-care practices so that I can enjoy this world without it overtaking my life and my nervous system. But I feel like kids of the future, their nervous system is going to be tapped into it.
It's really, you know, I have a handful of youth clients and I tell them, I'm like, hey, like, you know, I know we kind of joke, like people joke about that, but you should really kind of hone in on like, look at your screen time. And like, they'll be like, oh, I was on Snapchat 6 hours a day. And I'm like, what? And I know we kind of joke about it, but at the same time, it's like, this is going to create like massive repercussions in the societal shockwave.
So I have a crazy thought here. Like humans are here to adapt, right? We're going to adapt and keep adapting. What I think is interesting is the older generation, like I'm 50 in 2 months, and I have a totally different nervous system than kids that are going to be born in today's world are going to have. They're going to navigate things that cause me stress because it's such an altercation to my reality and my consciousness that it's probably not even going to go noticed by them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's going to be this adaptation from every generation that shifts because of the way the world is. Like, they're being born into a world that they can't comprehend any different. And I'm born in the 70s where nobody had phones. We didn't walk around dialing up people. If somebody had a phone, they were highfalutin.
But he pulls out, you know, a suitcase phone and they're like, holy smoke, this guy is a high roller.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
that's my nervous system. I was born in a time where that was the nervous system. So it's like these kids that you might be talking to might be looking at you like, what are you talking about? Because their reality is profoundly different. What they've always known is going to be profoundly different. And I feel like every generation born now is going to have a very different nervous system, which, you know, they're going to use apps to meditate, right? Whereas my generation, you sit in a chair and you meditate, you know? So it's just like,
yeah. And it's like, I was reading an article after they had the hurricanes in North Carolina last summer. And they were talking about how they lost all power. They didn't have Wi-Fi. And people were like, oh my gosh, like, I know my neighbors again. I was sitting on my front porch and I would just talk to my neighbors and I would just be like, hey, what's going on? This and that. And like, everybody's like, oh, this is so great. Like, I get to know people again and I feel so much more like calm. And then power came back on, they got Wi-Fi again, and everybody just went back inside.
Disappeared. Yeah.
Gone. Like, people don't know each other anymore. You know, it's like when I was growing up, I was a 90s kid, but I had 3 older brothers. We were outside on our bikes all day long or sledding or making forts in the woods. And you just don't see kids anymore doing that stuff. And it's really heartbreaking because it's like, they don't know any better. You know, they don't know. They're like, I tell some of my student, like, oh, this is what we, they're like, wait, you used to do what? Like, what do you mean? You didn't have self? I'm like, no, I didn't have a cell phone until I was like, I don't know, junior or senior in high school. And like, we didn't even have social media on our phones until 5 years later.
Yeah.
And it's like that Overton window has just shifted so far. One of my clients, he was talking about that. He's a construction guy and he has like 5 or 6 employees that are like more administrative rather than, and he's said like the new punk thing is no cell phones. They don't drink. And they're off social media and they're off the grid. And I'm like, that's super cool.
That's punk. I mean, my daughters both went through phases where they had flip phones and they were like, the happiest year of my life, I had a flip phone. So I think that there's also phones being created for people who feel like they need to regain their consciousness, their brain, like take it back from the quote unquote matrix, if you will, you know, like, okay, if I open up my computer, then I'm online, but in my pocket, I want something that gives me directions, allows me to make phone calls and text, and that's all I need. And everything else is nothing that I need to have with me all the time, because now people are like, oh, I'm sitting in a doctor's office, I'm scrolling or I'm working. And, you know, it's like, you don't get these breaks that we all used to have. So it's going to be interesting to see if the next generation has a different consciousness than ours and adapts to this world, or if there's a course correction where people just go back to, you know, having a BlackBerry or something more rudimentary. And I think, like you said, there's people that are already going back to that now where they're like off the grid and I don't need an iPhone, and give me something to just, you know, give me direction and whatever else. I don't need all the bells and whistles. I'm going to go back to being kind of, you know, a 80s, 90s person of a greater simplicity and more headspace. When you reached out to me and you were like, hey, I'm on protocol and here's all of the transformations over the last year, catch me up, because we hadn't spoke on the phone since August of 2024. How many grams of fiber are you getting through beans, vegetables? Like, are you able to eat vegetables? Can you eat fats now? Like, how far have you come?
Great questions. So what I'm on now is, like, I will stick to kind of like what we're talking about, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I really like three big meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast will look like a, you know, whether it's a chicken breast with some sweet potatoes, like all the veggies that I eat now are pretty much cooked. I can eat raw vegetables, but I just prefer cooked.
Same. Yeah.
And I just think I think it's easier for the body. Black beans are kind of like a staple in the diet because they're really satiating. I'll do like a cowboy caviar. I went like my entire life with thinking like, I can't eat bread. I can't eat this, you know, and I can't eat gluten. Gluten's the devil, especially in like the paleo world where it's like, you can never eat this. And like, now I eat like sourdough, like it's my job. White rice, I'll even have like flour tortillas. So that in like digestion is great. Sometimes it'll go like all of a sudden I'll eat something or I'll just be too stressed and I'm like, oh, gotta, you know, scale it back a little bit. So I'm not like hyper vigilant. I'm just aware.
Very different. One is curious, like, oh, what do I need to shift? And the other one is, holy shit, what do I got to do?
Seriously. And it's so weird because you can't describe it. Like, until you feel like you can't describe it. Yeah. So I'll do a lot of, I really love like cooked roasted carrots, roasted potatoes, sweet potatoes. Fats, I do olive oil. I'll have some peanut butter here and there.
Love me some peanut butter.
Well, I was doing the thing where like, when I was eating 4,200 calories a day, and like, if I had my, you know, just for like, for my sake, like tracking food was really powerful for me because it gave me not only permission to eat more food, but it like forced me to be like, I'd be like, oh yeah, I had two meals today. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've only eaten 1,600 calories today. Holy crap. Like, I got to eat more. And the peanut butter thing, when I was eating like 100 grams of fat a day, a lot of it was coming from peanut butter, like towards the end of the day, or fat snacks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm eating like a cup of peanut butter.
If I have somebody come to me in chronic physical pain, I'll have them eat that amount, even if they're not 6'3", because that healthy fat helps your body make the corticosteroids to bring down the inflammation in the joints. So if you can work that into your energy balance needs, it's a pretty phenomenal way to kind of help maintain an anti-inflammatory state in the body. Obviously, if you're not allergic to nuts, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. So things are really, you know, it's great to kind of have a lot more food freedom and just being like, oh, I can go out to eat and find something that I want to eat. And it's like, if I go to like a restaurant with some friends and I'm like, I don't want to eat that. I don't want to eat that. I'm like, hey, can I just get like a grilled chicken, you know, burger or sandwich, whatever, on like, and sometimes I'll have sourdough. I'm like, just give me a grilled chicken sandwich on sourdough. And then can I get a piece of grilled chicken on the side? Cause I need so much protein. And it makes it so much easier to just kind of keep things. You can get fancy with it, but sometimes it's just like, we're creatures of habit. And it's just eating the same meals or meal prepping for the week and just having breakfast as, you know, some beans and a chicken breast and some sourdough toast. It's just easy.
I'm so glad you're not afraid of gluten anymore. I meet so many people who are so scared of gluten, and I couldn't eat gluten while my gut was healing for a little while. But as soon as I could, like I never had a fear-mongering position with it, like, oh, that's the devil. I obviously cook a lot of my own sourdough, so I know exactly what goes in and a lot of love and care. And it's just delicious. Like I'm going through a new loaf that I just made on the weekend and I'm just like, olive oil. I eat my fat snack with like, I'll do olive oil all over my toast. Like for breakfast this morning, I did a piece of sourdough, high-end olive oil. Like that's where I'll spend money, is on olive oil. Like I want it to taste really rich and peppery and, you know, have all of polyphenols and anti-inflammatory, and then a little sea salt. I slapped a couple of eggs on there, some avocado and black beans. And I was like, could I get anything better? Could I get anything
better? I think it was Dr. Casey, she wrote the book Good Energy, and she was talking on a podcast. It's like, always opt for a savory breakfast.
Yeah, your blood sugar and your nervous system will thank you.
Big time. Yeah, absolutely. And you just feel, I don't know, so satiated and like stable energy, and you feel good, and you're like, oh, I can go for a walk, I can go work out. But once you just adapt those little principles, over time, things just get so much easier and you don't miss. I never feel deprived.
Yeah. Well, deprived is the state of mind anyway. I think one of the things about illness, it taught me, I'll speak for myself, it taught me what was actually important. Like I thought, oh, eating cupcakes and blah, 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 that's so important. And alcohol, that's so important. Only to be like, no, actually feeling great every day is so much more important.
Oh, than I would never trade, like, after going through that and regaining my quality of life, I would never sacrifice it. If someone was like, here's $1 billion, would you live with OCD or this or that? And you can have, but you have to live with it forever. I'd be like, no, if I get good food and I have a good quality of life, I do not care. You cannot, it's priceless.
It's priceless. It really is. And I think those of us who've been at rock bottom, we see it very differently than those who are still skirting around rock bottom, because I think rock bottom creates this undeniable reality of your health has to be at the top of the pinnacle. Everything else, like even listening to you order food, like you're looking through what's the best thing for me, what is going to give me the result of feeling good. And a lot of people feel like shit and they don't know it until they actually, they'll work with me and they're like, wow, I feel really good. I'm like, you sound surprised. And they're like, well, yeah, I didn't realize that I just wasn't feeling good all this time. And I'm like,
yeah, when you're riding that, like it's kind of like your reality just slowly degrades over time. And you don't realize, like, I always try to figure out like an analogy for it. It's like, if you're running at 50% and then the next year you're at 45%, and then the next year you're at 40, and it's just like this slow death of your energy levels and your nervous system. You just adapt to it and you don't know what you don't remember.
And we are, you know, it's in a weird way, we're too in the moment in some ways. We're so in the moment that we forget that there's a bigger reality outside of the moment. So much of consciousness or presence is like, be here now. But it's like, no, be here now and understand that if this reality that you're here in right now actually isn't serving you, like that's how present you have to get. Is it like, wait, how did I get here? And how, and do I actually want to keep these habits that are maintaining me exactly in the same place I was last year of feeling kind of like shit?
Yeah. And I think like if you went from 100 down to, you know, one, hit rock bottom from I'm really high energy levels to like, oh my gosh, I got nothing, you would know immediately. And then it's that slow kind of crawl. Sometimes it's like a crawl. I mean, it feels like a slog, like you're just like slogging around, and it's just like, all right, I know. And having that faith of like, okay, this will get better. And it's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be next week. And it's just like, can you just check those boxes off and give yourself 6 months, give yourself a year to really be like, all right, what can I control? Okay, I can have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And one thing that I really noticed too, I know you've talked about this, is in the health and fitness, in the bodybuilding world, everybody's like, oh, you should eat before going to bed or this or that, have a snack. And it's like, once I stopped eating, like if I stop eating at 6 o'clock, oh my gosh, my sleep skyrockets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because
Like,
your body's not busy kind of digesting
so
a
much
rat.
energy.
Yeah.
It's so much work to break that food down. And every time you eat, you kind of go into a slight stressed out state. Like, it's a good stress, but it's like, oh, yep, that requires energy to break this down. And so once I stop doing, any sort of snack or anything at night, if I stop eating at 6, I don't wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. If I eat at 7:30 or 8, and if I eat afterwards and then I go to bed at 10, 10:30, even reading a book, I'll wake up in the middle of the night. I'll wake up at 5:30 or 6 o'clock after 7-ish hours of sleep and be like, I just want to sleep more. And I don't know what it is about the blood sugar dysregulation or the nervous system, but if I stop eating at 6 and call it a day, I can get like 8, 9 hours of sleep. And it's just like,
Well, I
amazing.
think you are decoding your personal needs at the end of the day. Being really present to your body is the quickest way to figure out your roadmap. Like I stop eating at 5. But I also go to bed earlier. I don't go salsa dancing. And I feel better sleeping. I'm in menopause, better weight. Like I haven't gained any weight through menopause, and it's like showing up for what my body needs. Greatest joy.
Yeah.
Greatest joy.
A hundred
Great.
percent. And I think it's like one of the greatest gifts that you can give yourself is having that kind of understanding of how your own physiology works, like
Yeah.
what your body responds to. Like, I have friends that are, they can eat a lot of fruit and they feel great and they thrive. And I'm like, if I eat that, like if I have mango, nope. My body is like, dude, what did you just give us? It's way too much. My body does not like sugar. It like blueberries, whatever reason, I can eat blueberries, like it's my job. Doesn't affect me. My digestion is great. But if I start to have any sort of high fruit, tropical, it's like, no, don't do that.
Sounds like you're pretty local and seasonal then. Yeah, which is a good way to, I am too, as well. I find that eating low glycemic food super helpful, especially through this stage of life where I tend to be a little bit more insulin resistant. Well, Hunter, thank you so much for sharing your journey. And I'm so happy you're feeling well. Like, most important, I love what I do, but to me, the greatest gift is hearing from people and just hearing that they're doing well, that they figured it out. Because I think as you experience, there's no greater hell on earth than sickness.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for, kind of spreading the word and, just helping people. I think we just live so quick. And the one thing I am thankful about, like technology and social media, it allows people to find resources such as yourself and Karen to be like, okay, I can figure this out. There's people that can help. And your coaching style is so gentle that people understand how important that is with behavior and change and how much time it takes to really work through things. And it's never like a, you did this wrong. It's more so, let's just focus on this,
Yeah.
and what can we do to, find things that can really help. So thank you and all the resources that you bring.
Yeah. Well, keep in touch with me to
Absolutely.
hear how your journey continues to unfold. And I'm glad you were able to bring coffee back in. It sounds like that was an important part of the evolution of things.
In moderate, all in moderate, and knowing yourself, like,
Yeah.
I know people that will have, they have a cup of coffee and they're having a panic attack.
That's not the person to drink coffee,
And
but.
being aware, like, one thing, like, always, like, for me, anybody that does drink coffee, like, always drink coffee after a meal. But knowing yourself, that's huge. And just, trial and error and time,
Yeah, Hunter,
patience.
I could literally talk to you all day. So,
On that note,
have a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Hunter. I hope it inspires you to deeply nourish and prioritize your well-being. One of the big takeaways from Hunter's story was how we often think of just women kind of getting into that out of touch with their body, a dysmorphia of sorts. And it's a reminder that men as well can get into this, kind of eating disordered state and how undernourishing ourselves affects our mental health. So I appreciate you staying with us today. Not an easy conversation to have, not an easy experience to hear and profoundly inspiring to me. And I hope it inspires you. Take care of your wonderful self wherever you are in this beautiful world.